Greetings, people of the internet, and welcome to the Film Book Podcast. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me is...
Mike DiCriscio.
Now, if you're just joining us for the Film Book Podcast, generally what we do, we talk about some film news first. We'll talk about a few stories, including the recent Oscar nominations for this year. After that, we're going to be moving into a feature-length review. This time, we're reviewing Inherent Vice, the new film by Paul Thomas Anderson. And after that, we're going to do some recommendations. We're each going to recommend a movie that we think people should go see. So, Mike, how are you doing today?
Doing okay.
All right. Are you ready to podcast away?
Yeah. Let's see how this goes.
All right. Before we start, we just wanted to make a quick announcement for our listeners. The Interview, the new film by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, will be available on Netflix starting on January 24th. Today is the 22nd as we're recording this, so it will probably be on Netflix by the time you listen to this podcast. Here's what you can do. You can watch The Interview on Netflix, and then you can go listen to our previous episode in which we reviewed The Interview. Isn't that a great idea?
The internet's the best thing ever.
That's just how you got to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So we just wanted to get that out of the way. And Mike, you had one correction that you wanted to make from last week's episode.
Yeah. So in the first episode, we talked about, or I mentioned that there's a plan to cross over the two Bourne or the Bourne Legacy, Bourne Identity franchises.
The Matt Damon Bourne and the Jeremy Renner
Bourne, right. Or not formerly known as Bourne, or whatever his name is.
The artist formerly known as Bourne.
Yeah. But apparently, within the week or a few weeks that it's been, Film School Rejects reported that there is actually no official plan. Some producer, I don't remember who it was, but one of the producers involved in the projects confirmed there is no plan to cross over the two franchises.
Yes. So as of right now, there is Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon are supposedly coming back for Bourne 5.
Yeah, they're going to make their own one.
And then Jeremy Renner and Justin Lin possibly are still sort of in the works for their own.
Just like kind of going to do their own thing. They're going to hang out for a while.
Guess. It seems counterintuitive to not cross those guys over, especially because Jeremy Renner's Bourne is kind of lame.
Yeah. Yep. He's going to just be the other guy in a lot of stuff.
The other non-Bourne guy in the Bourne movies.
The less sexy version.
The lesser Bourne.
Yeah.
Bourne again.
So that was, I wanted to make a little update or correction.
Right. Okay, so we have that out of the way. So let's move on to our film news segment, where we will be discussing all of the film news.
Yep.
So our first story for the film news is an update of a story that we reported on last podcast. So last podcast we reported that Justin Lin is directing the next Star Trek movie. And now we know who's writing the next Star Trek movie. It's going to be Simon Pegg, who also stars as Scotty in the Star Trek movies.
Oh, man, this is going to be awesome.
Mike, what's your opinion on Simon Pegg writing Star
Trek? I want him to write all the things.
That's fair.
Yeah, just
that's
every
reasonable.
Movie. So this is going to be really cool. Although he's co-writing, so whatever.
Co-writing with Doug Jung. But it's a dubious... I'm not really sure what the collaborative process is. I feel like...
We need some jokes, Simon. Can you write some jokes in this?
How it might have happened is that a script has to already exist by this point.
I would hope.
I think Bob Orkey was writing a script, but since he left the project, they're not using his script.
Right.
But I think Doug Yoon is probably the guy who wrote the script.
The rewrite or something.
The rewrite of Bob Orkey's script. And Simon Pegg is probably rewriting that guy's script.
Yeah.
It's a weird connotation.
Yeah. Film scripts are weird.
It's a weird industry.
Yeah.
But so Simon Pegg directing Star Trek 3 is awesome.
Directing? He's not.
Did I say directing?
You said directing.
I meant writing. Simon
Pegg. That would be the coolest fucking thing ever.
Yes, but Simon Pegg writing Star Trek 3.
Yeah.
Super cool. Mm-hmm. It makes me think that Edgar Wright's going to come in, throw in some pointers.
Oh, man.
Actually, Edgar Wright directed a shot of Star Trek in the Darkness. I don't know if you're
really aware. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't remember when it is, but he
directed it.
Like one shot in the movie. That's
awesome.
An Edgar Wright shot.
I hope this just means Nick Frost is an android at some point. Or whatever.
Nick Frost just pops up as Scotty's friend.
Yeah. He's actually the mocap for the little reptilian thing in that.
Yes. There you go.
Is that the first one? Or
I think that's
the first
one.
When they find him.
Yeah.
Yep. He comes back.
This could mean an increased presence for Scotty in the movies.
Yeah,
I would hope so. Because
be
Simon
cool.
Pegg's one of the best parts of those movies.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg's one of the best parts in so many things.
Yep.
And Simon Pegg's a really great writer. He co-wrote all of the Blood and Ice Cream movies with Edgar Wright.
Right.
So I think this is a really cool thing.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
It's a good job.
I went from like zero about this Star Trek 3 to like 100, like, just pretty fast.
Immediately.
Now, Justin Lin is directing a Star Trek movie, and it's being written by Simon Pegg. It's just, it's going to be cool.
Good things are going
to
happen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yes.
All right, and let's move on to our next story.
Yeah, this one's not an update.
Not an update. This is a brand new story.
That's right.
To us. This is about a week old by this point.
Yeah, whatever.
But so David Fincher, one of my favorite directors of all time, really, is going to be directing a remake of Alfred Hitchcock's Strangers on a Train. And he's bringing along his Gone Girl star, Ben Affleck, and the Gone Girl writer, Gillian Flynn, to adapt Strangers on a Train. Mm-hmm. So, Mike.
This just makes me feel warm and fuzzy on the inside. But in a more murderous fashion.
Yes, that's exactly the that's exactly the connotations.
Yeah. I'm really excited. This is one of my favorite Hitchcock films. I love Strangers on a Train.
Right.
So I'm really excited. Yeah. But apparently, I was reading in Variety, I think, or on their website. It's just going to be called Strangers.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah, and it's going to be actually a very like it's a remake of the concept. I think.
Yeah.
But it's going to be very different from the original. From what I've heard, this is actually going to take place. Ben Affleck's going to play an actor who is campaigning for Oscars.
When I read that, I was like, maybe I'm not so excited. But
I thought that sounded great.
It's so weird.
That's like super, like, I don't know. I'm a big fan of like behind the scenes Hollywood like dramas.
Okay.
And also murder mysteries set in Hollywood specifically.
Okay.
Those are really cool to me.
That's cool. Yeah. So when you put it that way, I'm not that upset anymore.
So, I mean, some people were saying, like, oh, David Fincher's doing a remake. That's kind of lame. But
you know what? That actually kind of makes sense because I saw in the article they were like, David Fincher to reboot Strangers on a Train. And I was like, it's not a franchise. How can you reboot one movie?
Yeah.
But this, now, when you put it that way, it does make sense.
Right. It's like it's a different take on the material.
Yeah. So he's adapting it, I guess you could say.
This movie won't come out for a little while, as far as I know.
Yeah, I don't think anything has happened yet.
Right.
So well, it's like, oh, these people are going to do it.
From what I read, Ben Affleck's still directing his movie next,
right.
Live by Night, mm-hmm. which I think is coming out in 2016, I want to say. And David Fincher is also doing Utopia?
Yes.
I think it's Utopia.
Yeah. Yeah.
For HBO. And he's directing every episode of the first season.
Right.
Which is going to that's gonna be amazing.
That was a good sound for people.
Yes. I'm glad they can hear that sound and not see the motion.
Not see
did.
What I just did. You're welcome, everybody.
So anyway,
all
that's
two of you probably.
That's a very exciting notion.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped for it to happen. I liked Gillian Flynn's writing. I mean, yeah, it was good. I'm excited to see her.
Yeah, I think
not adapt a novel.
Yeah, honestly, I thought Gone Girl was one of David Fincher's best films. So to bring back basically the entire team from that movie,
right.
Is it's
good,
cool.
It's a good plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
all right.
Good job, David Fincher.
All right, let's move on from that story to talk about the big Hollywood news. The Oscar nominations came out on Thursday. A lot of surprises.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of big, a lot of some snubs. I don't really like the word snubs, but I'm going to use it for this context.
But it happened, so
yeah.
Can't take it back now.
So leading the pack with nominations, Birdman and The Grand Budapest Hotel, each with, I think, nine nominations.
Yep.
But here's the thing. The Lego Movie was not nominated for Best Animated Feature.
The biggest tragedy.
How does that even happen?
I don't know. I don't get it.
That's
I don't get it.
Possibly the biggest oversight of the last century. And I'm including all of history in that, not
wow.
just film.
So the last 15 years or the,
no, the last 100
the
years?
Oh, last full 100 years. I thought you said of the century.
The full 100-year century.
Wow.
It was actually, when it came out, James Gunn, director of Guardians of the Galaxy,
mm-hmm.
Spent a lot of time angrily tweeting that
yes.
the Lego Movie wasn't nominated.
I'm really glad about that. I saw, what's his name, Larry Wilmore, who just started The Nightly Show.
Yes.
He made a joke about that. He was making a reference to Selma, but he said there was one movie that was, you know, conspicuously left off. That has as much impact now as it did as when I was a child. And then he went into this. Everything is awesome. It was amazing. It was
yes.
so perfectly played.
Yes. Well, speaking of the Lego Movie, it did get nominated for Best Original Song for Everything
it
is Awesome.
Okay, that's cool.
Which is great. You know, I was worried that it wouldn't get nominated for that either, Best Original Song, because I want that one to win.
That would be awesome.
But mostly,
is that going to be performed?
Yeah. What the tradition is for Best Original Songs to be performed live at the Oscars.
Yes.
So that's really exciting. I'm hoping they actually get Tegan and Sarah and the Lonely Island to do the entire
to actually do
song.
That. That would be the best thing ever.
But we're focusing a lot on the Lego Movie. Let's move on to a couple other the
Yeah, right. There's other stuff happening.
One of the big controversies is that Selma basically got shut out of the Oscars.
Yeah.
It did get nominated for Best Picture.
Right.
It was not nominated for Best Director or Best Actor for Ava DuVernay and David Oyelowo.
Mm-hmm.
And that has made many people say that it's the whitest Oscars of all time.
They may not be wrong.
Yeah, there's if you look at like somebody made a picture of like all the actors and actresses nominated in Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, etc., and they're all white.
Wow.
I think the directors, except for Alejandro González Iñárritu, who's Mexican, all white.
Everybody's
guys.
White.
All white men, except for the actresses.
Well, nice save.
So. Yeah, I mean, there's a lack of diversity, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what to say about that.
And I think
other than that, it's
part of that is the fault of the Academy.
Yeah.
It's actually shocking to me that Selma didn't get as many nominations as it could have, because that movie is right up the Academy's alley.
It's pretty weird that they gave it Best Picture, which is, you know, arguably the most prestigious of all the awards, but then you're not good enough for anything else. Like, what? But
it's weird. I mean, it got a couple like things here and there. I think it's also nominated for Best Original Song.
Yeah, so
I don't think it was nominated for screenplay either. But there's a couple of things where it's like there for. The Academy is largely a group of old white men.
Yep. Kind of like every other board of things that are important.
Yes. And
just fucked up.
And so, I mean, while they should strive for more diverse stuff, and Selma is a great movie. I saw Selma recently.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet.
Selma's really good. I was like really surprised, and it seems like the movie that's right up the Academy's alley. It's a biopic. It's about significant historical events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, has a really strong lead performance. It's got all these things that seem like this is the type of movie that wins Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like for a while that it was going to be the Best Picture winner, because it's just that kind of movie.
Right.
And it's also very good. Like it's
got all the components that it needs.
Exactly. Like, and it, like being very good doesn't necessarily mean that'll be the Best Picture.
That's true.
That's not necessarily a qualification you need to have to win Best Picture.
Although it doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt, but.
But sometimes it does.
All right.
But, so you know, a lot of times I go with like a safe choice or whatever, but
that's true.
But I think it's a larger problem with the industry
not
being diverse enough as opposed to the Academy.
Right.
Which, like, if you think about all the movies that were, like, up for Oscars this year, like, the movies, the big Oscar movies that, like, people are going to look at.
Yeah.
Can you name another one besides Selma that wasn't, like, all
about,
white guys?
Without white people? No.
Exactly.
No, I can't.
It's really difficult to do. And I'm sure there are maybe a couple, like, indie movies or whatever that flew under the radar of the Academy. But for big studio-wide releases, like, outside of Selma, like, it's very difficult
That's
to find
the only
any
one.
Ones.
Yeah. Interesting.
So while it is upsetting that Selma didn't get any like big nominations and it probably won't win Best Picture, it's the way it goes,
it's
I guess.
The way it is.
Other big nominees, Boyhood, it's probably going to win.
Yeah.
It could. I mean, it's actually, I think it's a bigger toss-up this year in 2014/15
right.
than it has been in previous years.
In a while, yeah.
But I think if Boyhood were to win, or if Selma were to win, or if Grand Budapest Hotel were to win, or if Birdman were to win, like, I think the 2014 has been a phenomenal year for movies.
It's been one of the best that I remember.
If any of those four movies win, that will be, like, the best picture winner since, like, No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yes, I agree.
Possibly Whiplash also, although I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't seen that yet, but I could totally believe it if it went. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I mean, Whiplash doesn't have a chance of winning this picture. That's it's not going to happen.
Well, I meant, like, in terms of,
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons,
J.K. Simmons could very well win.
All I could think was Jonah Jameson. Yeah. So, I don't know. I've heard he was phenomenal in that. I haven't seen it, though.
Yes. But I think Boyhood is probably the one I would pick to win it all, or at least Richard Linklater for Best Director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although American Sniper has been a huge hit at the box office.
Yeah. Like, what happened? It's like it made
so what happened is this.
All of the money.
It was nominated for Oscars on Thursday.
Came out on
and
Friday.
And it came out on Friday.
Ah, that's fucked up.
That's actually genius.
That's beautiful.
Like,
I didn't even realize
that. Brilliant marketing.
Yeah.
A lot of people are saying, like, maybe the box office success of American Sniper could put that over the top to win Best Picture.
That would make me so mad.
I mean,
whoever makes the most money wins.
Right. Well, let's clarify, neither of us have seen American Sniper.
No, that's true. I haven't seen it. But it's based purely on nothing that I would be mad if it won.
But it just seems like okay, that could potentially happen.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But, you know, we'll play it by ear. It's going to be a close race,
yeah.
I think, this year.
Time
closer,
will tell.
Closer than previous years. Mm-hmm. Like, but you know how in a lot of times the Oscars come around and you already know who's going to win?
Yep.
It's like last year, 12 Years a Slave was going to win.
Yeah. that's a good point.
Year before that, Argo was going to win.
Yeah.
Year before that, The Artist was going to win.
I literally walked out of the theater and The Artist went, yeah, that's going to win Best Picture.
Yeah, exactly. Like...
Which I kind of thought would happen with Birdman, like we were discussing earlier before we started recording.
Well, I think Birdman has like a really good has a better shot than people think it will.
Yeah,
because of its subject matter, which is about actors suffering for their art.
Yep,
and you know who votes for the Oscars
besides actors suffering, quote unquote, suffering for their art?
Exactly, yeah. Like that's the main forefront of the Academy.
Yep.
Is actors. So
good point.
But yeah, that's you know, the Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
So, Mike, are you ready to move on into our review?
Yes.
All right. Then let's do that. Let's move on into our review of Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice.
If it's a quiet night out at the beach and your ex-old lady suddenly out of nowhere shows up with a story about her current billionaire land developer boyfriend and his wife and her boyfriend and a plot to kidnap the billionaire and throw him in a loony bin...
I need your help, Doc.
Maybe you should just look the other way. But if you're Doc, it may all start to get a little peculiar after that.
Michael Z. Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
Has vanished.
So where would I find him?
He's technically Jewish, but wants to be a Nazi.
And a girl don't necessarily want to get into difficulties with those folks.
You got a spare picture I could borrow?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you're better off with the Nazis.
Whoa.
Are you all right?
Am I?
That was from the trailer of Inherent Vice, the newest film by Paul Thomas Anderson. It stars Joaquin Phoenix, Josh Brolin, Owen Wilson, Catherine Waterston, Reese Witherspoon, Benicio Del Toro, and a whole host of others. And it's adapted from a novel by Thomas Pynchon. So, Mike, before we get into the actual review of Inherent Vice,
mm-hmm.
Why don't we each talk about a little bit about our relationship with Paul Thomas Anderson's work?
Okay.
Why don't you do that? Why don't you do that, man?
Thanks. So my first time I saw a P.T. Anderson movie that I like knew was him was The Master. I got lucky enough to see that in 70mm in Manhattan.
That's awesome.
And it was freaking cool. Yeah, it was like the coolest thing. And that's kind of when I was like, what? Like I actually hadn't seen There Will Be Blood yet. I actually just watched that for the first time like a couple months ago, which is crazy.
What?
Yeah, I don't know how I managed to not do that. But and I saw The Master and it blew my mind. I was like, this is one of the best things I've seen in a while or ever. I love everything that he is about. I love that they're like super cerebral but beautifully shot.
Right.
Always. Like every frame is a piece of art and I don't know.
Right. So. Okay. Yes. So my relationship with Paul Thomas Anderson, big fan. You know, I love The Master. I love There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is Punch Drunk Love, which is a really great, really funny movie. It's just really like, I don't even know how to describe it.
Yeah.
Cerebral would be the word.
I think. That's the best way I could come up with.
Honestly, Adam Sandler's best performance is in that movie. I know that's not saying much.
That's a bold statement.
It's also got a great Philip Seymour Hoffman turn, and it's just a really... just a really great movie. And Paul Thomas Anderson always gets, like, the best performances out of his actors.
Yeah, I don't know how he does
it. Like, especially with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Obviously, he can't do that anymore. But
I don't know, man. Along Came Polly, maybe up there for him.
Philip Seymour Hoffman was a phenomenal actor. You know,
he was. You're right. That's a good point.
But, you know, so The Master was incredible. And I was really excited for Inherent Vice.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to talk about Inherent Vice. Mike, why don't you start?
Okay, so I really liked it, but it was, it was really great, but it was the least Paul Thomas Anderson movie of the movies that I've seen by him, I think.
Okay.
Like, it looked like his, like, you know, it was beautifully shot, every, you know, scene was framed perfectly, but it didn't have the artiness, I guess. Not that that's a critique or anything.
Okay.
I just felt it was my... It's a comedy. Like, I wasn't expecting that. Or I thought it came off as a comedy to me.
Right.
Did you have that?
Yes. Also? Yeah. I got that impression.
Okay. Okay, good. I didn't know if I was like the weird guy. But yeah, I don't know. Everything was good.
All right. I'll talk.
Yeah, you talk more.
I'll talk things.
Yeah, good job. Thanks.
So, all right. Inherent Vice is incredibly shot.
Oh, you got stuff written down? That's not fair.
Inherent Vice is incredibly shot, aesthetically perfect, has great performances, and it's often very funny.
See, I said
and
that just in
I
less
think
words.
It's a complete mess.
You didn't like it?
I think I liked it.
Okay.
I honestly had no idea what my feelings were about the movie after I walked out of the movie.
Okay.
And it's like a week later, and I'm still like, yeah. I have no idea what I thought about that.
Yeah, I guess you're right, because all I could say was, it was good.
You know, it's a weird, odd thing. It seems like he's taking on a different style in this movie.
Yeah.
Obviously, the style of Thomas Pynchon, who wrote the
book. Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to say.
And I was reading into some of the behind-the-scenes stuff mm-hmm. of Inherent Vice, and there are four movies that Paul Thomas Anderson has cited as, like, the inspiration for Inherent Vice.
Okay.
And those movies are Kiss Me Deadly.
Okay.
The Long Goodbye.
Yep.
The Big Sleep.
Yep.
And Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke.
Wow, that's actually, all four of those come through beautifully.
Right.
It all makes sense now.
So to that end, I think, Paul Thomas Anderson's intent was to make a comedy.
Right.
Much like Punch Drunk Love is also like a pretty comedic movie.
That's true.
And I think he's very good at comedy. It's a very oddball kind of style comedy that he has.
Yeah.
Honestly, my impression coming out of this movie was that it was the Big Lebowski for the art house crowd.
Yes.
Which
that makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah. It's Big Lebowski for people who may have gone to film school at some point.
Yeah, not that the Big Lebowski isn't that.
That's also true.
But it seems like the Big Lebowski is like more overtly comedic, I would say.
Yeah, it's more out. You're right. You're very right.
And this is like, there are long stretches where there are no laughs to be had. And then there's like really like funny stuff
like
that
laugh
just happens out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And when it's funny, it's really funny.
It nails it when it is funny.
Personally, and I'm going to critique Paul Thomas Anderson for a second.
Okay.
His movies are really long.
They are. They are very long.
Except for Punch Drunk Love and Hard Eight, I think. Punch Drunk Love is like 97 minutes. It's a perfectly tight
manageable
movie.
Yeah.
And that's part of why it's my favorite. Uh-huh. It's all right there.
Right.
There's not a frame wasted in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of his movies justify their length. I think The Master is as long as it needs to be, for example.
Definitely.
I don't think Inherent Vice justifies its length.
Okay.
It's like 2 hours and 15 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Many of its scenes go nowhere.
That's true.
It's a very unfocused, very confusing movie.
Yeah, but it's because Doc is just lost, man. He doesn't know what he's doing.
When I left the theater, I felt like I was in the same haze of reefer that Doc was. Yeah.
That's a good point.
Which I think is actually what it's going for.
Yeah.
So
they want
end,
the
I
audience.
Think it works.
Yeah.
Yeah,
man. You can't critique it if it was on purpose or whatever.
But that said, I would like to see it again.
Yeah. Like, I'm not. I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah. It seems like there's a recurring pattern to Paul Thomas Anderson's movies where, you know, you watch it again, you appreciate it more almost.
Yeah. You can pick up on more, well, obviously, more stuff.
Yes. And I usually reject the notion of, like, reviewing a movie before seeing it, like, twice or something.
Right.
Which people said about The Master. It was like, you can't really review it until you've seen it, like, two times.
Yeah. That's pretty weird.
Which I reject. Well, obviously, I'm rejecting it because we're reviewing
Inherent
Vice right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my basic take on Inherent Vice. But, Josh Brolin's great.
Yeah, I don't...
Josh Brolin's
like
really funny.
Like you said, everyone... Something about Paul Thomas Anderson brings out the best in everybody.
Yes. Josh Brolin's great. Joaquin Phoenix is, as always, awesome.
Amazing.
Benicio
del Toro is amazing for the 4 minutes that he's on screen. Like, and Eric Roberts for that one scene he's in.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who just pop up, like, out of nowhere and then are gone.
Yeah. Oh, man, it was great.
But, yeah, so that's...
I think my favorite of the cameos... are we going to do spoilers?
Well, I had, a spoiler section.
Okay, well, I'll save that. Never mind.
Okay. All right, well, do you have any other thoughts on the movie?
The music was amazing.
Yes, Johnny Greenwood's score.
Yeah.
And also the soundtrack.
And the sound, soundtrack was phenomenal. It's in the vein of Big Lebowski.
Yes.
In terms of like the, you know, the hippie stoner thing.
Yeah.
They nailed it. It was phenomenal. And I loved the use of like the narrator.
Okay.
I don't know. There was some, like, I couldn't tell if she was real or not. Because, like, she kind of is at one point.
It was, like, otherworldly.
Yeah, and I do like that they, you know, they kept mentioning, or the narrator kept mentioning, like, the like the astrology aspect of everything. Like,
right.
Doc was born at a 40, when the moon was at a 45-degree angle, or whatever she says. Which I think was really cool, you know, to bring in that 60s, 70s? I don't even remember what it is. But that California beach hippie, you know, culture
right.
clash part, you know, with Josh Brolin as the straight, you know, the flat top cut detective
yeah.
clashing with this giant sideburn having just burned out.
Yes. Yeah, I think many of the film's best scenes are between Joaquin Phoenix and Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Who are really funny together.
When they're at the, when he's at the thing and he's, he keeps yelling, Muerto Panaqueco. At the chef. Oh, that was great. I don't know. I really liked it. The comedic moments really hit home for me. So.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like I said, the funny moments are really funny.
Yeah.
I was in the theater. I was in a theater of maybe like six people.
Really?
Two of them walked out.
Wow. I've actually never seen that happen, I don't think.
And then there was just me. There were two guys who were sitting in the same row as me on the other side.
Yeah.
And there was like one person behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would laugh occasionally at, like, certain things. And then this one guy was dying, like, the entire time.
That's amazing. That was great.
So, I mean, it connected. It's connected with the people that I think it's going to connect with.
But I do agree with you that it was very labyrinthian.
Yeah, it's very obtuse.
Yeah. Now you're being acute. No.
it's very difficult to follow.
It is.
I got... that Joaquin Phoenix was looking for a girl
yeah.
who had disappeared and who was also his girlfriend.
And was looking for a dude.
Yes.
Who had disappeared.
And that's about it. that's the basic summary. And also Josh Brolin's involved.
Right. Yes. Yes.
But past that, like, I have no idea. I can't recount
what's going on.
I can't recount like a single plot element of this movie. Past like the first 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Because that's when it just goes, it's like, oh, we're going there? Okay, we're going to go there. And then there's just twist after twist after twist, but like they're not really twists, they're kind of twists.
There's no real structure to this movie. It's very unfocused.
Yes, it is.
And again, that's probably
intentional. It's on purpose,
man.
Yeah.
Like it reflects the state of mind of Doc.
Of Doc, Joaquin Phoenix, his character.
But, you know, I think it's a movie that I may appreciate more over time.
Mm-hmm.
First reaction, I was like, fine.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's worth checking out because it's Paul Thomas Anderson.
Right.
But
that was what made me very, at like the very first time I heard about this, I was like, dude, Paul Thomas Anderson's doing a detective film.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be the best. And then it was more about hippies and drugs, which is fine.
Which is,
cool. It was great.
All right, so you want to move on into spoilers?
Yeah.
All right, let's do that. Let's move on into the spoiler section for Inherent Vice. Okay, this is the spoiler section for Inherent Vice. So, Mike, you were going to say something earlier, but... I kept it quiet until now. So,
I was going to say my favorite cameo, because there are lots of them in this movie, is Martin Short as the apparently heroin-pushing dentist.
Yes. Martin Short is in this movie for maybe a total of like 5 or 6 minutes.
Maybe.
And I think he's easily the funniest.
He's definitely the funniest.
It's very rare that you can say that Martin Short was the funniest thing in a movie.
But he nailed it.
He's so good.
My God. I just remembered. So I was going to reference the scene when Doc Joaquin Phoenix goes to talk to him at his office.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what do you want? Like prescription, whatever, man. And he pulls out like this bottle of powder, I don't know, and they, like, snort it and, like, rub it on their gums, and they all, like, tweak out. And then I just remember when they get pulled over in the car in the very next scene, how much Martin Short is sweating. It's the funniest thing. He's like, I got priors, man. Wow, we got him dead. We're dead. He's gonna, we're screwed. And he's just sweating so much.
Yes. Yeah, that was really funny. That was probably my favorite scene in the movie, actually. Was that whole, like, getting pulled over scene. But I think the thing that made me laugh the hardest in the movie, actually, and I kind of wish the movie had more of this, was it was early on in the movie. Joaquin Phoenix is visiting a woman whose
I think we're going to have the same thing.
His husband disappeared, and she shows him a picture of their dead baby.
That's exactly what I was going to...
And he picks up the picture and just screams and hands it back to her.
Just screams, then dead. It's like dead band. It's amazing.
And I thought that was like,
and she doesn't even react.
Yeah, that was... I think that was the funniest scene. That was easily, like, I laughed the hardest at that scene. And I really wish that we had more of that.
Yeah.
Because that was amazing.
That was great. Yeah, that was phenomenal. But there was a lot. The other scene that really had me laughing, but then I felt really weird because I was the only one in the theater laughing. It's the scene when Doc is walking to the police station, and we're having the narrator give us the like monologue speech about what's going, like, you know, kind of filling us in.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Josh Brolin and he says something to the effect of, like, I got something to tell you. And Josh Brolin goes, please don't make it another boring or like wandering hippie diatribe after we just listened to one from the narrator. And I started laughing and no one in the theater laughed. So I was like, oh, maybe I'm projecting something.
I think it's one of those movies that's going to hit a lot of people in very specific points.
Yeah.
So it's not like a broad general audience, like broad comedy.
Right.
It's going to like make a few people laugh at a few different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that there's jokes all over this movie.
That just went over our heads.
That just went over our heads.
That's possible.
Because it seems like we laughed at different times.
Yeah.
I laughed a lot towards the end when Josh Brolin just started eating.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
His marijuana.
He just picks up the plate.
Yeah. I don't understand why that happened.
I couldn't either. I couldn't understand if Josh Brolin and Joaquin Phoenix just watching him when he's crying. I forgot about that. If their characters had gone to high school together, like they seemed like they had been longtime friends.
Right. Yeah. They had a weird relationship.
Very weird.
It was very, Jeffrey Lebowski and Walter.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. And then, but the other thing with, I guess in terms of plot things, nebulousness of what the Golden Fang is.
That right.
Every person has, like, oh, because Doc has no idea. He just asks everybody, and it's a ship. It's a drug smuggling thing. It's a tax shelter for the dentist.
Yeah.
It's a club, I think, at one of them.
Like, one of those. The Golden Fang changes all the time.
Yeah.
Owen Wilson will just pop up at random times.
Yep.
I have no idea how he fits into the movie.
Me either. I think he was the person he was looking for after, like, one of the four people that he was trying to search. I don't know.
Like, it becomes very difficult to follow.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why I want to see it again, so I can see if I can follow
it. So I can try
better.
To trace the actual plot. I really liked the inclusion of Doc's notebook, which, you know, the trusty detective notebook where he keeps everything.
Right.
They're just utterly useless notes. When he just writes, like, oh, paranoia alert. I can never remember the guy's name. Omar from The Wire.
Michael K. Williams.
Michael K. Williams, yeah. When he comes in for the first time.
Right.
And then when he's in his office, and I love that his office is his private detective office is a gynecologist. I can't say the word now. Oh my God. An OBGYN's.
Yes.
It's an office and a doctor's office.
Right.
With
Maya Rudolph.
Yeah. And she's the receptionist, and she's totally cool with him being a private detective there.
Maya Rudolph's actually Paul Thomas Anderson's wife, I think.
Really?
Or girlfriend or something. Along those lines. They've been dating for a long time, or they've been together for a long time.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But one of the character's sisters gives him something, and he writes something Spanish in his notebook. Like, he has no idea what's going on, which is reassuring because as an audience member, I didn't either. So.
Right. Fair enough. I think that's most of what we wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
do you have any other scenes that you wanted to discuss? One of my favorites, actually, was when It was like early on in the movie. He was early on in the search, and he stops at like a whorehouse.
Oh, and my God.
The girl asks him if he wants to eat pussy.
Yep. And the pussy eater special or something?
Yeah.
Pussy buffet special.
And she just keeps offering it.
Yeah, the whole time. Actually, the scene after that, because he gets knocked out in that, and then he wakes up next to the dead body, it's probably the scene, it's probably my favorite shot of the film, when it's Joaquin Phoenix laying there, the dead body, and then there's just straight line of police cars and all the cops standing there.
Yeah.
Yes. That was when I was like, oh, yeah, it's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Look how beautiful that is.
Yeah. So that, what was it? The scene where Joaquin Phoenix just, like, breaks down to the ground and Josh Brolin starts carrying him.
Yeah,
like a baby.
I don't get it. It didn't. There was a lot of weird stuff
there's
like
so
that.
So many things that don't make any sense.
And then they came back to it later.
Yeah.
When he's, like, during one of the monologues that somebody's having. I don't know. But I wanted to talk about Paul Thomas Anderson, or at least The Master, also just kind of they just kind of end, like the last scene is like
right,
and I
I don't know, I remember feeling more thematically fulfilled by The Master.
Yes, correct, that's true. But whereas, the very last scene I believe was him on the beach, right? Or am I making
The Master?
That?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's been a couple of years.
I think it goes back to that, but in the end of this one, I'm so mad at myself because it's Joaquin Phoenix and the girl, I don't remember who her name.
Catherine Waterston?
Yeah. They're talking in the car. She's talking. And I kind of zoned out for a minute. And then I zoned back in. Like, when I came back, I was like, oh, shit, this is going to be the end of the movie. And I missed everything she said. And then the credits rolled. And I was like, no! What happened? So that happened to me.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah. I guess I'll just have to see it again.
Oh, darn.
Damn.
All right, so I think that'll bring us to the end of our review of Inherent Vice, but it seems like we both enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
Even if we didn't fully understand it. Sounds like you liked it a little more than I did.
Yeah, I think I just enjoy weird things.
I mean, I do too.
You do too.
So,
but I guess I give it more of a strong recommendation than you do. But I still want I'm going to see it again.
So. And I would say see it anyway, yeah. Because it's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. It's a really interesting movie.
Mm-hmm. Phenomenally acted.
Phenomenally acted, beautifully shot, you know, all of those things.
Yes.
So. Definitely Inherent Vice, one to check out.
Yep.
All right. That's the end of our review of Inherent Vice. Let's move on into our recommendations for the week.
Okay.
Before we wrap up. Mm-hmm. So, Mike, what would you like to recommend the audience watch?
So this is going to be weird because it's a recommendation, but it's like maybe you're not going to like it. My recommendation is Frank.
Right.
Which is just recently out on DVD and Blu-ray and also Netflix.
Right.
It's up on Netflix.
Yes, starring Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender. Maggie Gyllenhaal is also in it.
Okay.
A bunch of other people that I recognize, but I don't remember their names because I'm not good at this. the dude from Killing Them Softly.
Oh, Scoot McNairy?
Yes. Was he also the guy that... whatever. Yeah, sure, that guy. and they're phenomenally acted. Even Michael Fassbender, he's, you know, the plot is a failing musician happens upon a band whose keyboardist is in the process of trying to drown himself.
Right.
He goes, hey, I play keyboards. And they're like, oh, you can come to the show tonight. So he plays with them. Michael Fassbender's character is the lead singer, but he wears a giant papier-mâché head.
Right.
The whole movie.
The entire time. So Michael Fassbender never takes the head off.
Yes, almost. The very end, he takes it off.
Okay.
And it's kind of cool.
But spoilers, man.
Well, you don't want to make fake statements or false statements. But it's really cool. It's weird. The music is great, obviously, because it's about a band, about an indie band. And they. Mm. But it's funny because it's weird in that they think they're very cerebral and trippy, and they're like trying to expand their consciousness to its furthest corners as they're like playing these weird nonsense things in a theremin, but they're just like really odd and not good at what they're trying to do. So I don't know, it's really funny and trippy, but like the thing that my critique of it is it's a comedy, it's built as a comedy, it's kind of, you know,
right,
slapsticky, it's got a lot of funny back and forth, but it also flops, you know, flip-flops from comedy to being like a kind of serious thing about mental illness because of Frank with the giant head.
Okay.
And the tone is very I can't think of the right word, like it goes back and forth between those two things.
Okay.
So the mental illness stuff kind of is like, man, I feel weird laughing now that they just went through that, like, you know.
Right.
But it's cool. I think it's worth checking out. The performances are great.
Yes, I've heard interesting stuff about the movie. I've been meaning to check that one out.
Yeah.
So let's talk about my recommendation.
Yes, let's Why do not? That. What is your recommendation?
So my recommendation this week is The Double, which is the newest film by Richard Ayoade. Richard Ayoade used to be the star, one of the stars of The IT Crowd. He also, a couple years ago, directed a movie called Submarine, which was a really great coming-of-age story with a deadpan British humor, which I love.
Yep, I'm in.
And The Double builds upon that deadpan British humor. It is an adaptation of a novella by Dostoevsky, updated for the modern day. And it's very much Richard Ayoade channeling Terry Gilliam in a weird way.
Okay.
And The Double is about – The Double stars Jesse Eisenberg.
Mm-hmm. Does he do a British accent?
No.
All right. Thank God.
Jesse Eisenberg. He's like a shy dude who works like in this company. He's like – a cog in the machine.
Right.
Nobody really respects him. He has a crush on Mia Wasikowska, but she doesn't reciprocate that.
Mm-hmm.
And then this other guy comes into work,
mm-hmm.
and he looks and talks exactly like Jesse Eisenberg, and it is Jesse Eisenberg playing a dual role.
I see what they did there.
But he's way more confident. He's way more popular.
Right.
And it starts to destroy
Shy Jesse Eisenberg's
life.
Right.
In really demeaning and funny ways.
Wow.
So it's a really... dark comedy sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really oddball. It's really weird. I loved it.
Wow.
It's really like, it's, and when I said, channeling Terry Gilliam, like it mm-hmm. really feels like Brazil or something like that. Like it feels like in that same kind of world almost.
Right. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm and interested in that.
And Jesse Eisenberg is terrific.
Crushes it.
In both roles. And I think it has a really interesting perspective on, like, the duality of being a person.
Well, analysis.
And, you it's an interesting concept to me to see what you would be like in a different, like, if something was different about you, what you would be like.
Almost. The opposite of what you normally are like.
Yes. There was actually another movie that came out earlier this year called Enemy with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Which I also saw. And it has very much the same concept, that movie, is Jake Gyllenhaal playing two roles, and he finds a doppelganger of himself. I wasn't as crazy about Enemy. I think that movie's fine, but it...
Did it try to play it serious, Enemy?
Enemy is mostly a serious movie.
Do you think the comedy benefited?
I think The Double benefits from it being, like... Like, it's still a very dark
comedy.
Intense... It's thriller, almost.
Okay.
The Double. But it has a lot of really funny moments that help it out, I think. But yeah, it's really good in any case.
Cool. Like and that's on Netflix, right?
It is available on Netflix now. It's probably also available on DVD and Blu-ray.
Yep.
And I imagine in other video on demand
sources.
So cool. Yeah, that is my recommendation for the week.
Sounds good. A little more glowing than mine, but
a little more.
It's still see Frank.
Yeah, I'm sure Frank is good too. I'm going to check that out at some point.
Cool.
All right, well, that wraps it up for the Film Book Podcast. I'm Mike Smith. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, rate, and take a moment to give us a review. If you'd like to hear more of my thoughts on Inherent Vice or of anything else, movies, TV shows, what have you, you can check out my work at filmbook.com or you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/nsmithfilmblog. Mike, where can people find more of your work?
You can find me on Twitter at mickdeck. That's MickDeck.
All right. So, Mike, do you have any last words before we wrap up?
I hope we do more of these. I don't think no one told us not to do an episode two.
So we're rocking.
So we're batting 1,000 so far.
Actually, this is technically episode one of the film.
We're already rebooting.
Yeah. This is our Super
Wars. Episode two, the update.
Yeah. Yes. So this is technically episode one.
Okay.
We're called the Film Book Podcast now. Last episode, we called ourselves the Film Review Podcast. And that was our first attempt at it. But that's we changed the name and we're going to be on a different podcast feed. So now we are the Film Book Podcast.
All right.
Permanently and forever.
Thanks, filmbook.com.
All right. So, all right, guys, thank you for listening and we hope to see you around for next time.
Tweet. Now I have to do that. didn't tweet about it. Did it really happen? We'll never.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
A tweet falls into forest.
Falls onto a feed and no one favorites it. Was it really tweeted? I'm glad we were recording that. Oh man.
Let me put that at the end of the review.
Perfect.